Now the guy's got Paulie as a partner. Any problems, he goes to Paulie. Trouble with the bill, he can go to Paulie. Trouble with the cops, deliveries, Tommy, he can call Paulie. And now the guy's got to come up with Paulie's money every week, no matter what. Business bad? Fuck you, pay me. Oh, you had a fire? Fuck you, pay me. Place got hit by lightning, huh? Fuck you, pay me. Also, Paulie could do anything, especially run up bills on the joint's credit. And why not? Nobody's gonna pay for it anyway. And as soon as the deliveries are made in the front door, you move the stuff out the back and sell it at a discount. You take a $200 case of booze and you sell it for $100. Doesn't matter, it's all profit. And then finally, when there's nothing left,
fucking shame,
and you can't borrow another buck from the bank or buy another case of booze, you bust the joint out. You light a match.
You look like you're decorating a Christmas tree.
That's right, Little Saigon. When you're done fucking the shit up, what's left to do? When you're done stealing as much as you can from the quote-unquote restaurant, what do you do? Snippet of audio is from the 1989 or 1990 mobster classic, The Goodfellas. Such a great film. And that particular scene has to do with the fact that, you know, the Goodfellas decided to get into business with a restaurant owner. And what do you think is going to happen? Is it going to be a long-lasting business that continues for, you know, decades and decades and passed down generation to generation? Is it going to be like that? Or is it going to be something else? Something a little darker. As we've discussed on the Little Saigon Report, there are many ways of looking at the world today. And these different perspectives, these different filters, paradigms, models, whatever you want to call them, they all have their advantages and disadvantages. But my fearful analogy, the one for the ugly scenario, and this is the one that co-opts all the "they've got Tesla's technology. They've got Tesla's magical fucking spaceship. They got a way to take people to Mars and live in the fucking ice cubes and survive in the vacuum of space. They can survive. They're just waiting to light a match. They're just waiting to set the quote-unquote restaurant on fire." There are many ways to default, folks. There are many ways to default. One way to default is to tell your creditor, "fuck you, I have no money." Technically, that is my state right now. I don't have the money to pay them. I don't believe they have a moral right to demand payment, sorry. And they're not getting paid, period. If they wanted to, I guess they could try to get the Congress and the Senate and the President to pass a law to throw people like me in jail. And guess what? If they can continue the infinite gray nothing another 10 years, that's coming. And yeah, you can say, "well, Dan, you had a credit card and you probably used it to do stupid shit." I will, mea culpa, freely admit that my debt is a combination of student loans, a credit card, and basically a Toyota Camry that I paid more than 60% on. So I basically paid most of it. And when you consider how shitty that was, the Toyota Camry I bought in 2014 when compared to a Corolla 10 or 15 years earlier, yeah, it was shittier. It was a shittier Toyota that I spent twice as much for. And it got repossessed. And I don't give a shit. If you want me to be ashamed, I'm not going to be. Okay? There are people today killing themselves because they're in debt. Do you know what I'm not going to do? Okay, I might kill myself for any number of goddamn reasons, including the fact that some doctor said, oh, you got stage 4 cancer, but we can put you on a Gumbus mix. Thank you, doctor. I will try whiskey and weed until I can no longer endure. Then I will kiss a 12-gauge shotgun. I will not dwindle away in a fucking hospital with poison rotting my bones and my brain. But I can tell you this, I won't kill myself because of debt. What I actually think is going on right now is some type of default is planned. And it's either going to be a technical default or a what I would call, you know, default basically a default scenario where there is no option other than just saying, you know, fuck you. There's no money. There's no cash. I really don't see a good scenario for default other than a big fuck you. The problem is the big fuck you could take on many forms. It could take on many, many, many fucking forms. The big fuck you. It's really hard to say what form it takes. But yeah, I guess you could say my fearful scenario is the one where the quote-unquote people that run the world have stolen as much as they can, and they realize that everything left over is shit, and that worse than that, they may have so fucked up the natural environment that it's all going to be pretty much a big poisonous swamp in a few decades. So maybe they're just deciding to pop smoke and leave. And maybe they do set fire to the restaurant. I really don't know, folks. I'm just another fucking goldfish in the goldfish bowl. But yes, that little segment of audio was from the movie Goodfellas. For all the fucking trademark, copyright, fucking lawyers out there, we need our pound of flesh. That little fair use clip is from the movie Goodfellas. I'm going to read a little article from Zero Hedge, if that's okay. It was published this morning, and as I stated, today is December the 16th, 2019, if I haven't already said that. Here in Little Saigon, Seattle, it is about 7:20 a.m., plus or minus. Maybe it's 7:15. Maybe it's 7:30. I'm kind of losing track of time here in Little Saigon, maybe because of the time slip. Maybe because of the time holes opening up on the sidewalk, the state of nature is so fucking dire. Maybe it's because of the cracks in my own awareness that are opening up holes to my own failure. Maybe I am projecting my own disgust onto the world, or rather, it is looping back onto me. Maybe. This article from Zero Hedge was penned by Tyler Durden, pseudonym, obviously, and the headline title is Fed's Emergency Repo Operation Oversubscribed as Repo Rates Spike to December High. Ahead of today's massive liquidity drain, which according to some calculations will be as much as $100 billion between $54 billion in coupon settlements from last week's Treasury auctions and an additional $50 billion or so in corporate income tax payments to the Treasury. Well, that's great. Which combined would be as large, if not larger, than the September 16th cash transfer to the Treasury, which sparked the mid-September repo crisis. Last Thursday, the Fed announced a kitchen sink liquidity tsunami, throwing as much as $500 billion in liquidity backstops in the form of expanded and extended repo and term repo operations, while keeping the Fed's not QE T-bill monetization chugging along. Well, that's great. The first of these emergency repo operations...
Behold.
Oh, fuck you. Fucking Zero Hedge advertisements. The first of these emergency repo operations was scheduled for this morning ahead of the liquidity drain in the form of a $50 billion 32-day repo, which took place shortly after 8 a.m. and once again oversubscribed, as there was more demand for liquidity, or $54.25 billion, than there was total supply. Specifically, dealers submitted $29.85 billion in Treasury securities and $24.4 billion in mortgage-backed securities at stop-out rates of 1.56 and 1.58% respectively, and which both came in more than fully subscribed relative to $28.75 billion in Treasuries and $21.241 billion in mortgage-backed securities. This offering, which matures on January 17, 2020, was the fourth turn repo providing funding past the year-end period. The fact that the operation was oversubscribed was a first indication that banks are once again reserve-constrained and scrambling to procure as much year-end liquidity as they can get their hands on. Whether repo operations in the coming days are oversubscribed will indicate if the Fed's roughly $500 billion in repo ops scheduled for the next 4 weeks will be enough to keep the Fed from losing control over overnight rates. As Credit Suisse repo expert Zoltan Pozsar predicted last week in his now infamous Countdown to QE4 report. One ominous sign, the overnight G over C repo rate spike from 1.58% on Friday to 1.69% this morning, the highest print since the end of November, and the clearest indication yet that despite throwing a kitchen sink of liquidity in the market, some dealers and banks are still having problems getting access to much-needed liquidity. Oh boy. Keep an eye on the repo rate over the next few hours for an indication if today's $100 billion liquidity drain will overpower the Fed's preemptive liquidity tsunami, in effect triggering Zoltan Pozsar's worst-case scenario. Oh boy, Zoltan. So, and we've been keeping up with this little story here for a bit, haven't we? At the Little Saigon Report, we've been talking about the repo market. And specifically, we've been talking about putting it in the context of liquidity, specifically liquidity. And we've talked about liquidity before, but liquidity, you know, there's different ways of thinking about the terribly complex and integrated and intricate economy the world has today. But in terms of cash flow, you could think of it as pumps and pipes, and almost like it's a hydraulic workflow. It is a lot like hydraulics. You know, the thing about hydraulics, you utilize fluids to transfer energy. And it's kind of cool. You know, for many, many years, aircraft use hydraulics to control, you know, ailerons and rudders and shit like that. And hydraulics are still used all over the place. If you look at heavy equipment, you will see hydraulics, pumps and fucking pipes and fucking tubes. So the concept of liquidity might be thought of in terms of hydraulics. If I want to push a ship that contains food from city A to city B, I have to be able to support all the transactions that allow that ship to move from city A to city B, that from port A to port B. And those transactions are not just payment for the load. Oh, no, 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 no. Those transactions involve insurance. Those transactions involve all kinds of management and oversight. Those transactions involve every single direct and indirect purchase that goes into making the ship leave port A with food and get to port B with food. There's a lot of fucking liquidity that has to flow through the global system before that fucking ship can even leave port. So when you think of liquidity, think of it in terms of hydraulic fluid. It's not a terrible analogy, really. And because it's a lot like hydraulic fluid, you have to have it. If you don't have it, the system basically can have all kinds of horsepower. You can have the most powerful pump in the world, and that pump will burn itself out because there is nothing to pump. There is nothing to push. There's no liquidity. Of course, worst case scenario, you've got a leaky system. Your hydraulic system is leaking. Your pipes and your hoses are all old. You've got dry rot. The bottom line is you have a leaky hydraulic system. So even though you fill it up and you say, well, now it's full. My name's Jerome Powell, and I filled up the hydraulic reservoir with $500 billion. That's pretty fucking amazing, don't you think? My name's Jerome Powell, Chairman of the Federal Reserve. My friend Gus is at the Equus building. Gus sits in that room alone with a magical button. Hey, Gus. Can you pump some more QE in there? She's leaking again. I've mentioned this before, and if you never heard of Dr. Mark Faber, you should look him up. Sometimes people call Noriel Roubini Dr. Doom, but in reality, I think Dr. Mark Faber gets some credit for being also another Dr. Doom. I think about 4 or 5 years ago, and you can double check this, Dr. Mark Faber, could have been 3 years ago, basically said that when, not if, but when the Federal Reserve went to quantitative easing again, they would go to $1 trillion, that's with a T, $1 trillion in purchasing mortgage-backed securities and treasuries. Now, a lot of people thought he was crazy when he said that. I said, no, they did all the QE, they did one, they did two, they did three, they did TARP, they did TWIST, they did Obama's omnibus stimulus package from 2009. All kinds of meaningful use for the fucking healthcare industry. I know a little bit about that. Yeah, they did a lot, but the thing is, it didn't work. And as many commentators have pointed out, what they really did is they filled in holes. They really didn't, you know, create opportunities for capital formation. In fact, that was probably never even the fucking point. What they did is they filled in giant holes that were created by people who should have gone bankrupt personally, who should have gone to jail in some cases, given the number of suicides because people's lives have been turned to shit. They should have been hung. They really should have been. People who think that you can play with people's lives at the scale of billions and trillions of dollars and not expect any repercussions, they're people who are playing with fate. There will be repercussions. You can take them now or take them later. I promise you, sooner is always better than later. It really is. If you think later is better, it's not. It's not. I say take your licks now, but you can take them later. Later, it's going to be guillotines and lynch mobs and pitchforks and torches. So I think you can think of liquidity a lot like hydraulic fluid. It's not the best analogy, but if you think in terms of the mechanics of flow and pressure, it kind of explains some of the weirdness in the U.S. economy. It also explains why if you just pour more liquidity on the problem, the most likely result is some sort of explosion. Because you have a broken hydraulic system. Your hydraulic system is broken. You're trying to fix it by just pouring in more hydraulic fluid. We'll just pour more. Sure, it leaks out. Sure, the rich are taking their money and filling in holes, leaks. Sure, the rich are taking the money and spending it on financial chicanery. That's another leak. Sure, the rich are taking the money and converting it to paintings and gold and 300-year-old scotch. Yeah, that's another fucking leak in your hose. Sure, sure, sure. But the fact is, all this is true. And the most likely behavior at this point is just to pour more hydraulic fluid into the system and to turn up the pressure. And I think in that particular situation, what you're going to see at some point is one or more of these pipes simply break. And then all hell breaks loose. And the question is, where do they break? I really don't know. One potential spot are the pension funds. The pension fund pipes, they can only take so much of this bullshit because ultimately pension funds have to pay out. And they have to pay out money that is usable for the pensioners, i.e. if a pensioner gets $2,000 a month and currently they can kind of live on that, and then next month $2,000 basically buys them 30% of their existence, and the other 70% they have to magically come up with, pensioners will not be happy about that. They won't be. And their kids won't be happy about it. In fact, there'll be a lot of fucking rage because they were made promises. And yes, the promises were bullshit. And yes, they should have been intelligent enough to see through the bullshit, but they weren't. And I'll let you know a little secret. Their inability to see the problem will just make them angrier. Oh shit, cognitive dissonance. It's a real bitch going both directions. It's a bitch when you get confused and deluded, and it's a bitch when you get let down, because when you're let down, you're just not let down a little. You're let down a lot. You're let down bigly, as a Trumpster might say. Bigly, very bigly. So one of the pipes is the pension funds. And I just don't know if they can take this bullshit any longer. I don't know if they can take this crony stupid bullshit. But what I can tell you is, best case scenario, I think we got a couple more years of this stupidity. If they want anything like what we used to call, what do we call it? What kind of growth was it? Healthy growth? If they want anything like robust, that's a good word. If they want anything like robust economic growth, there's a lot of schemes they're going to have to employ. And one of them is this trade tactic, this whole trade war bullshit, which I still think is mostly bullshit, but it might not be. I mean, I think from the Trump perspective, it's bullshit. The purpose of the trade war is not to get that much of a better trade deal. The purpose is to basically trounce U.S. economic activity a little so that when the trade war ends, there's going to be a big pickup. Everyone's going to have a fancy job and a fancy home and a fancy car for about, I don't know, two fancy years. And then year three, that's when things get really, really messed up. So right now I see two basic scenarios, and I think they're worth talking through because we talked about them. Scenario one is the crack up boom scenario. Trump wants it, and the question is, does China want it? I think China wants it too. I still think some of this trade war bullshit could be bullshit. It could be a kind of conspiracy of two, of basically enemies, a conspiracy of enemies who aren't really enemies, who simply want to come up with a way to trick the economy of the world and trick the markets and to buy themselves a little bit more time. So one way of doing that is this silly Trump, the silly fucking trade war. And then when the trade war ends, it'll be fucking amazing. No trade war. Fuck. Okay? Really low interest rates. Powell's gonna go to zero, folks. It's inevitable at this point. They have to go to zero. They cannot pay back the debt. And then you add the push button QE. Remember Gus? Gus at the Eccles building? His magical button? Listen, it's not just going to be $500 billion in stealth QE. And even if it becomes overt QE4, it's the same shit. Though I kind of think they're going to try to do stealth QE because stealth QE gives them a kind of deniability. Okay? They can fuck with you. And they experimented, oh, by the way, back in 2015, 2016, they experimented with a lot of stealth QE, basically getting the ECB, the European Central Bank, to buy U.S. treasuries. So, yeah, I think they like stealth QE. That's scenario one. The second scenario is where Trump wants all the above, but China's not in on it. And this is where things get sketchy, because I think China has the resources to trigger a financial crisis in the U.S. I'm not saying it won't hurt them too, but it looks like they're already being hurt. So the question is, what does a wounded animal do? Does a wounded animal lay down and die? Does a wounded animal attempt to find some, you know, peace or some sort of, you know, middle ground? Or does a wounded animal ultimately attack to save its life? I think China is a wounded animal right now. And I think it's as likely as not that they're going to allow businesses in China to fail as long as the outcome is worse for us. I have no doubt that they're ready to do that. That is totally something within the rubric of Chinese history. Keep in mind, the Chinese government killed 60 million people between 1956 and 1962 just to build some shitty fucking dams and a few goddamn highways and railroads. 60 million people murdered in work camps. I would call them death camps. So if you're wondering, is there a history of China doing shit like this? The fucking Chinese lost 600,000 Chinese communists in the Korean War. To give you some perspective, I think we lost roughly 40,000. They lost more in the Korean War than we lost in total fucking casualties in World War II, folks. This is something you need to fucking meditate on. So if you're asking, is the Chinese government willing to sacrifice its people for an agenda? Well, the simple answer is yes and hell yes. And nothing has changed that. Yeah, things are a little trickier today because life for some Chinese has gotten quite good, gotten quite fancy, gotten quite wonderful. They got a kind of middle class that's roughly the population of the United States. That's pretty fucking amazing. Of course, you can't breathe where they live, but then how's that different from Seattle now? No different at all, really. The air quality here is probably a little better. A little better. So that's the thing. And here's the thing. In scenario one, where there's the big Trump crack-up boom, In that scenario, this is the narrative. Trump wins in 2020. It's not because of voters, folks. Oh my God, please. It's because that's the story that makes sense for 2020. If they let the crack-up boom happen, that means Trump's going to be elected again, okay? However, if in fact Zoltan Pozsar is correct and that it's worse than what he's saying, and if in fact Powell is forced to go to super-duper QE faster than he wants to, and because of that, he might not be able to lower interest rates, but he still might, what you could have is one of these worst case scenarios with the US dollar. You could have a rapid loss of confidence. It could happen very quickly. Okay, that's how fragile things are. So if, for example, in the new year, you start seeing pension funds fail because, again, the Chinese are willing to sacrifice a business here, a business there, which from their perspective, those are jobs and businesses, whatever. From our perspective, those are investments. Oh my God, you remember the guy that came to your meeting last month, your CalPERS meeting? He told you about the China-India Magic Fund. Your pension will make 15% year on year in the Magic Fund. It cannot fail. You know, China and India, the future. In this scenario, in the scenario where the 2.5 year crack-up boom does not occur, then I think Trump loses in 2020 for that narrative, and I think Tulsi Gabbard wins. In the scenario where Trump wins, I think he's running against Warren or Hillary or both. Elizabeth Warren or Hillary Clinton or both. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's both, because it'll be the last great stand of the true, good, liberal white women who will be destroyed and therefore opening the ground in 2024 for that young, almost white, almost brown woman from Hawaii with virtually no history and a member of the CFR, someone who signed up for the military after 9/11. You need to meditate on that shit, people. After 9/11. So, ostensibly anti-war, but if you ask me, I think that's bullshit too. That being said, Tulsi Gabbard is going to be, I think, the next Democratic president of the United States, whether it's in 2020 or 2024, and the only thing that would prevent it from being 2020 would be the Trump miracle, Morning America, crack-up boom. Oh, it'll be so glorious. This time next year, everybody will have Gumbus Gold and Rimulac tables, and all kinds of Glimbus folk will be happy this time next year. It'll be great. It'll be great. This is not about voting either, folks. I don't believe voting works. This is about what I would call plausible storylines. Storylines are narratives that are plausible enough that it allows the people that think they run the world to continue to manage the human population. It's not about people going to a fucking box and pushing a button. It's about convincing them that when they push that fucking button, they had some kind of fucking power. It's why they tossed Trump at the American people in 2016, and it's why they tossed Obama at this nation in 2008. Red meat. Red meat for the fucking tigers and the sharks. It has nothing to do with voting. Nothing. This hour of the Little Saigon Report is brought to you by Grimulac Cubes of Belltown, Seattle. Grimulac Cubes of Belltown, Seattle have been around since 1979. This is their 40th year in business, you fuck. Grimulac Cubes of Belltown, Seattle was formed after the second oil shock of the 70s, the one that followed the Iranian Revolution. Grimulac Cubes of Belltown, Seattle was formed by Charlie McFoozle. He was worried about nutritious food for people, if there's not enough, you know, food to eat, everybody needs their vitamins. Everyone needs protein and essential oils, greases and minerals and metals. Everyone needs a few of the metals, don't they? One Grimulac cube contains 1,000 calories of high sucrose fructose. It contains 1,000 calories of corn syrup. One Grimulac cube contains a fair portion of monosodium glutamate for taste. One Grimulac cube contains at least one of the vitamins you need. They don't really tell you which one. You can live on Grimulac cubes, they say. They say you can live on them for a while, but what's better about the Grimulac cube is it can be stacked inside of your fucking kitchen or your fucking garage or in your fucking basement. You can stack Grimulac cubes and put them there, and they will stay good for 50 years, my gosh. Getting ready for Christmas, Grimulac cubes of Belltown, Seattle will have one cube. Every cube will be on sale for $2.50. That's $2.50. That's a good fucking deal when it comes to feeding the family these days. Grimulac cubes of Belltown, Seattle has a fucking recipe book. You can cook all things of, you can make all kinds of stuff for the holidays using Grimulac cubes. You can make nacho cheese, just add a little food coloring and melt it down. There you go. You can make tacos, just add some fucking, you know, they call it plant material. It's really wood pulp, but that'll make it look like fucking, I don't know, taco meat maybe. There are lots of things you can do with Grimulac cubes of Belltown, Seattle. You can survive. Just not going to be very happy about it. I read an article on Zero Hedge today that was about a statement that Obama made, and I think I'm going to read the article from Zero Hedge. It also, you know, written by Tyler Durden, pseudonym Tyler Durden. Headline, Obama says women are indisputably better than men and should lead every country. The ghost of Catherine the Great's really happy to hear that bullshit. Yeah. Yeah. Anywho, speaking at a private event in Singapore on Monday, President Obama said that if women ran every country, we would all live with significantly improved living standards and there would be less war and strife. When it comes to leadership, women are indisputably better than men. Obama said, according to the BBC, which was apparently invited to the event. Most of the world's problems, Obama said, stem from too many old men in positions of power, you know, like Uncle Dan. An obvious slight directed at President Donald Trump, though he wasn't explicitly named. Yeah, it wasn't just Trump he was talking about. Although they're not perfect, women are so much more advanced and even-headed than men that Obama believes if women were given 2 years running every country on Earth, all of our problems would be fixed. I would propose probably the opposite would happen, but hey, keep going with it. In the last 100 years of women having more power to vote, the Earth has almost turned into a giant steaming pile of shit. But yeah, things have gotten better though, and look at the credit cards. Shopping with those fucking credit cards. The world is so much better today because of the voting and the shopping and the fucking debt. Now, women, I just want you to know, and this is Obama speaking. Now, women, I just want you to know you are not perfect, but what I can say pretty indisputably is that you're better than us men. I'm absolutely confident that for 2 years, if every nation on Earth was run by women, you would see a significant improvement across the board, blah, 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 on just about everything. Living. Oh, my God, you fuck. Fucking A. Fucking zero hedge. Living standards and outcomes. When asked if he would ever consider going back into political leadership, he said he believed in leaders stepping aside when the time came. If you look at the world and look at the problems, it's usually old people, usually old men not getting out of the way. It is important for political leaders to try and remind themselves that you're there to do a job, but you're not there for life. You are not there in order to prop up your own self sense of self-importance or your own power. Wow, Obama, you had fucking little kids singing songs to you like Hitler, but yeah, you were not about your ego. For the record, there was no hint in the BBC story about Obama's comments that he was joking. Obama and his wife, Michelle, both traveled to Kuala Lumpur last week for an Obama Foundation event. Wow, I wonder what kind of bullshit they're funding now. And we're apparently still in the region for Obama to appear at this event. Isn't that nice? Okay. So let's just unbox this or something. I'm 50 years old, which by definition is old. It's not young. I am a man, and I am straight, and I am white. Although I'm not white enough, that's the great thing about being ginger. You're never white enough. You're never colored enough. You're just a ginger, and everybody gets to hate you. Everybody gets to hate you if you're a ginger. But I just don't give a fuck, is my point. I don't care. I can say this with a reasonable amount of authority. Any human being, male or female, gay or straight, is capable of murder and mayhem and theft and abuse and stupidity. So if you're asking me, do I think women would commit fewer war crimes if they were in charge? No. I won't say absolutely they commit more, although I suspect you might be fucking surprised, but they would not commit fewer, okay, war crimes. That's highly unlikely, okay? We have examples of women leading throughout history. They're not necessarily wiser or better than men. They're just as capable of being petty and, yeah, dictatorial and basically being a piece of shit. Just as capable. Just as capable, just as murderous, just as mean. Yeah, the other thing is this, folks, is that, you know, there's a lot of this tipping the hat to the quote-unquote crisis of hopelessness in America. But you should really look at the statistics of suicides. I think there's a deliberate effort to convince people of certain demographics that it would be better if they just went away. Like Obama said, just get the fuck out of the way. And is he really just talking about the government? No. Visit Microsoft campus. Visit any fucking software development campus. He's talking about places like that too, folks. the young women need to take charge and rule the fucking software companies and the world and the hospitals, and everything will be better. What I'm telling you is, best case scenario, it's a wash. Best case scenario, it's neither better nor worse. Most likely scenario, it's worse. Because this is a gimmick. It's stupid. Nothing about your sexual junk makes you better or worse at leading. Nothing. Having a penis doesn't make you a better leader. Having a vagina doesn't make you a better leader. It has zero to do with it. And here's the thing. In reality, Obama's talking about rulers, not leaders. Leaders don't need guns. They don't need drones. They don't need to fucking murder people and be proud of it like Obama was. He was proud of his ability to kill people, just like Hillary. Leaders don't have to threaten people with guns, folks. Leaders lead by example. Leaders inspire. So there's very little about our government or any government that is about leadership. It's about rulership. It's about controlling people. It's about pointing guns at people. Anyways, I don't want to spend more time on this because it's not about old white men feeling sorry for themselves. I don't really give a shit one way or the other. But if you want to take the sins of the world and put them on my back, then please deposit some fucking money in my checking account. Because there is zero evidence that I can see in my own existence to show that I have any power at all. The only thing I'm convinced of is that I'll be damn lucky to live to see 70 years of age. Damn fucking lucky. If I'm really lucky, I will one day be 70 years old. That's how much fucking power I have. Way more likely I die in the next 10 years. That's how much power I have. Way more likely that people like me get isolated and marginalized and pushed aside. That's all my power. Way more likely that people like me are told that we'd be better, it'd be much better for the world if we just killed ourselves. And I've had more than a few people tell me that. And what I can say is, you know what? Maybe your world would be better if I killed myself. But just because I'm pissing you off, you've given me a reason to live. Just because I'm pissing you off, I'm going to hang in there, buddy. Just because you're pissed off, because your basic theory is, if all the old white men died, the world would be a better place. I got to let you on a little secret here. A lot of these old white men you hate so much know how to do things. In fact, one of the problems of the world right now is you're pushing these people aside and shit is falling apart. I wonder why. And all the fucking talk of AI and technology and Air Force generals on crack talking about starships, it doesn't change the simple fact that shit is falling apart. The garbage cannot be collected. The water cannot be made clean. And the food is poison. So yeah, this 100-year experiment in women voting has been so fucking awesome. So fucking awesome. We've had, you know, a couple wars since then. We've had all kinds of shitty fucking leadership. And we have gone into massive debt because it's something we owe ourselves. Like a pumpkin latte. If you enjoy my podcast, if you get any value out of it, if you're a woman and you listen, which is highly unlikely because you probably think I'm a misogynist, and I'm not. I'm not. I just, you know, I had six sisters growing up, so I've seen both sides of this fucking rainbow. And I gotta tell you something, folks. Women would be no better and no worse at running the world into the ground if they think government is the solution. In fact, any douchebag that thinks pointing guns at people is the way to solve problems, I don't give a shit if it's a man or a woman. The world crumbles. You remember Obama telling us we had to attack Syria in 2013? You remember Hillary Clinton going out and saying, we gotta attack fucking Assad, he's so evil? Well, it turns out that all the reports of chemical attacks were total bullshit. Matter of public fucking record. We all suspected, I suspected in 2013, it was false flag bullshit, but now it's a matter of public record, and guess what? People will still keep voting. And they won't even care. Hillary, Elizabeth Warren, they don't give a shit. Whoever promises the most wins the most. Whoever promises magical happy days again, whether it's Obama, whether it's Trump, whether it's fucking Elizabeth Warren, whether it's Hillary goddamn Clinton, if she runs again, holy fuck, guess what? That means Trump is supposed to win. Yeah, if Hillary runs again, Trump is supposed to win, FYI. If it is Hillary versus Trump, the very moment it looks like Hillary's going to get the nomination on the Democratic side, odds of Trump winning are basically 100%. And it's not because voting counts, folks. It's because there is no storyline. There is no competent narrative. And maybe Hillary knows this. I think she might, and maybe she doesn't. She might be that fucking confused. But there is no competent storyline by which Hillary makes sense as the next president of the United States. None. What they need to do is keep people from fucking killing people. They need to keep people from going crazy. People are already going crazy. They've been told there's been an economic recovery for 10 years, and it's a big fucking lie. And now we got to dump trillions of dollars into the banks because why? Little Timmy Geithner. Calling little Timmy Geithner. Didn't back in 2012 and 2013, didn't you say all these banks passed their stress tests? Oh, I guess the stress test doesn't last very long, does it? I guess the stress test only tells you things for about 5 fucking seconds. In fact, I think Timothy Geithner's little stress tests were a lot like the Volkswagen tests for emissions for their diesel vehicles. Which means that, yeah, they worked when they needed to, but then most of the time they really don't. I think Timothy Geithner, and if you don't know who Timothy Geithner was, he was a Treasury Secretary under Obama. He helped save the banking system with Bernanke. He gave some of the most crooked people that ever fucking lived a giant check for nearly setting the world on fire, little Timmy Geithner. Also, he was also part of the film Time Bandits. He played an extra for the little midgets. I don't know what to tell you, folks. I really don't. But I think the reason why, they can't have someone like Hillary or Bernie Sanders, or Ron Paul, and I'm not saying these people are equal. It's because there are people who would vote for these people or be so opposed to them that it would create a fracture. Hillary would fracture things. Ron Paul would fracture things. They don't want fractures, folks. They want obedience. They want people to cheer, cheer, cheer. And if they can't get everyone, they just want enough. And that's why Obama won in 2008. It wasn't because he was elected, you stupid fuck. And that's why Trump won in 2016. He was not elected. He was selected, just like all the rest. They need someone in office who's going to keep people from going nuts. Because right now, people are beginning to suspect that they've been lied to for a very long time about their situation. And what's worse is the people that have been lying to them are covering their asses. They're building condos in South America. They're building fucking bunkers all around the world, including Antarctica. They're converting their repo money, their repo man money, to gold, physical silver, paintings, fucking bottles of goddamn scotch. They need somebody in office that's going to keep the kettle from boiling over, folks. until they can do just as the little segment from Goodfellas said, until they can, they've gotten all the money they've gotten all the cash they can get, they've gotten all the gold and the hookers and cocaine they could possibly need all stashed away in Antarctica. Once they've done that, there's only one thing left to do, folks. Light a match. For those of you who listen to the Little Saigon Report, and you have money or cashola, you've already taken care of your food, your water, and your shelter, and people you love and care about, you've bought in Christmas gifts, including some type of snack for a little French bulldog you may or may not have. If you've covered all the bases and you're not currently in debt, and you have a little extra money, then please, by all means, donate to the Little Saigon Report. Every little bit helps. Donate whatever you can afford. Donate as often as you can afford to, whatever seems to make sense. By all means, donate if you can. I'll have a Venmo link in the description of this podcast, and there is one on the homepage for my SoundCloud channel. Donate as much as you can if you can. If you can't, don't worry about it. Simply recommend my podcast if you think you can without people killing you or taking vengeance upon you. Because I think there are people who might take vengeance upon you if you recommend my podcast and you don't really understand what you're doing. But what I will say is this. If you're rich, if you got billions, if you got plenty of gold and plenty of silver and plenty of machine guns, hookers, and cocaine, you got your Chris Craft constellations, you got your fucking Maserati, and you're living in a cabin in Tierra del Fuego, then please, by all means, donate thousands every month. Donate as much as you can, as often as you can. And if you're tapped into the repo madness, send a little of that flow my way. I could use a little liquidity. Uncle Dan could use some liquidity to cover his little hydraulic scenarios. Because remember, folks, when you're done taking out all the loans and you can't take out any more, when you're done stealing the whiskey and the furs and all the food, when you're done with squeezing everything you can out of that old-timey Italian restaurant, there's only one thing left to do, you fuck. Light a match.